Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Cutforth.
Hello.
This week, we're talking about autonomous automobiles.
Oh, self-driving cars!
Self-driving cars. But first, we have a little Spotify update.
Ooh.
So, on Spotify, right now, right this very second, at time of recording, we have 42,579 followers.
42,500!
We have 42,500. I think we can get that to 45,000.
I think we can get it to 55,000.
Yeah, but by next time.
I think we can get it to 100,000.
Okay, if we get it to 100,000 by next time, Luke will...
chop off my own head.
It's not an incentive. Anyway, I also have a question.
For some, it might be.
I also have a question for you. If you're watching or listening, whatever you're doing, get to YouTube, get down to the comments and answer this question. Can you drive? Like, legally, can you drive? I can drive.
I can legally drive.
I can also drive illegally.
How?
Speeding, crashing.
Yeah, drunk.
Drunk.
Yeah.
You know, all of those things.
Yeah.
I don't. But I can. Okay, so let's get into this. So the automotive industry, that accounts for 14% of total production and capital investment in Europe. So cars are a big deal, pretty obviously.
14% of all what?
Total production and capital investment in Europe.
That feels like low, actually.
This was from a paper from like 2 years ago. So I don't know. This is I'm just reading out the words that are on the screen. I don't know nothing about the automotive industry in Europe. So I don't know if 14% seems low or
high. I suppose
that
includes trains and planes and lots of other
automobiles,
things.
Automobiles.
Yes.
You know.
Trucks, vans.
Automobiles.
Motorbikes.
Okay, do you know what? I'm going to continue on with the podcast because we've stopped too soon. And that's kind of what we're talking about today, right? Self-driving cars. This is a solution to a problem. And the problem is people. We suck at many things. And driving is kind of just one of them.
The other thing it solves is having to employ pesky humans.
See, okay, we'll get to why that is a good thing and also a terrible thing in a bit. But yes, you are right. So, like, yeah, self-driving cars, they solve a problem to an extent of humans not being perfect and the idea that AI can make perfect decisions because, you know, they're computers and they're not bound by human reaction times or human drunkenness or human feelings. When's the last time you saw a computer get drunk, huh?
Probably in a movie.
In real life, probably never. So that's why self-driving cars...
Like Bender from Futurama. He probably gets drunk at some point.
He actually needs to drink alcohol to survive.
Oh.
That's the lore of Futurama. There you go. Let's actually get into self-driving cars, though. I've got a question for you, Luke.
Okay.
What are self-driving cars?
Well, I would imagine, like many things in life, self-driving cars are not a binary. They are a spectrum. Stop. Take your head out of your hands. What I mean by that is that we have already got, to a certain extent, some self-driving cars. So my car, for example, will warn me if I'm about to crash and also warn me a lot of the times when I'm not about to crash.
Hey, buddy, you're about to crash. I'm not going to do anything about it, but just keep an eye out.
Well, actually, that's not true. It primes the brakes. So if it thinks I'm about to crash, it will like get the brakes ready in case I press them so that they'll come on quicker. My parents' car, for example, if you like slightly veer out of a lane in a motorway, it will sort of tug you back in automatically. So that's kind of a self-driving car. But the sort of broader answer to your question is a car which is able to navigate from point A to point B without any human intervention.
Yeah, you kind of hit on everything there. The idea that, you know, when we talk about self-driving cars, we're not just talking about entirely autonomous vehicles. That's obviously the goal.
Mm.
Now, when I say it's the goal, this is the thing. I know when I talk about this, there's going to be people in the comments already being like, oh, self-driving cars, evil, bad. We'll get to it. We'll get to it. we're just starting. Okay, I've got to lay the groundwork. We'll get there, okay?
Yeah.
But that is the goal, right? Fully autonomous vehicles, or at least the goal in theory. And you're right again in saying that there are vehicles already that aren't fully autonomous, but do assist you in different ways. So let's actually get into that. But first, I just want to say, do you know where autonomous comes from? What the word autonomous means?
No.
It's from the Greek, from autos, which means self, and nomos, which means govern. So self-govern.
Ah, govern oneself.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right? So that's
self-governing cars.
Self-governing cars. They don't need Parliament. They don't need a jury. They'll do it themselves.
God, imagine that, like, the ultimate end for autonomous cars is that they, like, form a government. And they take over the world from us. We thought it was AI we had to be scared of. It's actually the cars.
Look, this is just the plot of Cars. Pixar's Cars. Or not the plot. The plot of the prequel to Cars, right?
Is it really?
It must be, right? It's like, this is a world of cars where the car pope exists. There's human infrastructure that cars can't have built, okay? That's clearly what happened
You're
in Cars.
You're so right. They don't have thumbs.
They don't have thumbs.
How did they build all this stuff?
I don't know. So, let's...
Cats have many more fingers than cars have. And they haven't built roads. So how are we expecting the cars have done it?
I'm not going to answer that question. And instead, I'm going to move on to the history of self-driving cars. Okay?
Yeah, please. Because it's actually like, there's like a much longer history to self-driving cars than you'd think. Like, yeah. They were originally like mechanical self-driving cars. It's weird.
Yeah, so I was going to ask that. When do you think the first sort of self-driving car came about?
I think probably like 1940s.
Oh, that's so close. 1920s
Damn.
Was when people sort of started doing these experiments on self-driving cars. And actually, you're not too far off, right? In the 80s is when actually self-sufficient and autonomous cars started cropping up. Obviously, they weren't on public roads and out driving tons of people. You know, they've not been like under the radar for this whole time. But to an extent, they have, right? So you've actually hit on two of the three kinds of autonomous cars sort of systems that I was going to talk about. So the one that you didn't mention is auto-locking brakes or anti-locking brakes. Sorry,
ABS.
Anti-locking brakes. Yeah, ABS. Anti-locking brake system. Yes, yes. ABS. Yeah. And do you know what that does?
Yes. So when you are, as far as I understand it from, I think it's physics you learn about ABS. So it's something like when you brake, you mm-hmm. don't actually, an ABS system doesn't actually just brake and hold the brakes on. It like sort of like brakes, and like takes them off every second
yeah.
so that the wheels don't lock up.
Yeah.
And that does two things. Number one, it means that you don't wear down your tires in just one place.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, I think it actually increases friction counterintuitively mm-hmm. because you are turning different parts of the wheel. Because if you were going like 70 miles an hour and you just broke and your wheel stopped, then you would skid along the floor, wear out the tire, and it would, like, as you skidded, it would become more smooth, which is yeah. exactly what you don't want in a tire.
Exactly, yeah. So before we had ABS, you would have to do that manually. You'd have to apply pressure and release it, apply pressure and release it, apply pressure and release it. Otherwise, your brakes would lock, your wheels would lock, and you'd go into a skid, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely spot on. This braking system does that for you far better than a human
yeah.
could, right? Because it's programmed to do this specifically. And from that came another one that you were talking about, which is getting the brakes ready for to be braked
yeah, yeah.
in the event of a potential crash, right? You know, and you can see how from anti-locking brake systems, you kind of grow out to what we've got now. You know, you start with a car that's like, okay, I'm going to help you brake because you suck at it. I'm going to do this for you. And then it's like, hey, you know, people kind of suck at braking in dangerous situations, so let's just get the brakes ready for them. And as we get, you know, our technology kind of gets better and better and better, we've now got the one that you were talking about where, you know, if you're veering kind of out of a lane a little bit, it'll correct a little bit.
Yeah.
There are so many systems in cars nowadays that you're probably not really fully aware of because they don't, okay, they'll advertise them, sure, but also, like, it's definitely something that you could just not be aware of at all. Just completely ignore. Like, I've driven your car before. I didn't know it was anything.
I'm guessing that, like, cruise control wouldn't count as, like, self-driving because it's not actually doing anything other than just maintaining the speed.
Well, I would say that cruise control, self-driving isn't the best sort of phrase for it, I guess. That's the sort of public phrase, the colloquial phrase, but I think autonomous vehicles is more what is used in the literature and by people sort of working on it. And you could consider cruise control as being some form of autonomy, right?
Mm.
It's not necessarily making a decision, but it is doing something for you that you yeah. would be that you would otherwise be doing, right?
And there is a modification to cruise control that's existed for quite a while, which is like you're in cruise control, but if you come up behind a car, it will slow down
really
to
good.
Match the speed of the car
yeah.
in front of you.
Yeah.
Or the opposite, you can have it so that it always matches the speed of the car in front of you.
Yeah, that is the thing. That cruise control is an interesting one where I think when it first rolled out, there were some people that thought, oh, this car can now drive itself because cruise control, it doesn't, in your head, it doesn't immediately sound like the car is just maintaining speed. cruise control is like...
It's cruising.
It's cruising, and it's controlling it. It's controlling, right? And that, I think that caused a few accidents when this kind of like first came out. And you can see a similar thing with self-driving cars now, because we think that Tesla has self-driving cars, right?
They do not.
What did Tesla have?
They have cars with all the equipment to do self-driving, and they have not yet activated full self-driving on those cars. Although they might have just rolled it out in some areas, I think.
I think they've rolled it out in some areas,
but
yeah.
But essentially, yeah, when you bought a Tesla like 3 years ago, it came with a bunch of equipment that meant they would later on be able to update it with full self-driving, which is what they call their FSD. Mm. But it did not actually do that.
Yeah,
but it has
assisted
something. It has like it automatically brakes if it detects an accident kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It has this amazing feature, which I'm sure lots of other self-driving cars have, which is like it uses, I think, radar or something to see underneath the car ahead of you to the car ahead of that
oh,
one.
Oh, that's good.
So that if that one breaks, the car knows that the one in front of you is probably going to break too, which
that's
is like mind-blowing, incredible.
I mean, the technology behind this is absolutely incredible. Yeah, and I kind of want to touch on this really briefly, that Tesla have done this really irritating thing where they've kind of marketed themselves as being self-driving cars. Look at us, they're self-driving cars. They're assisted driving cars. They're assisted.
Elon Musk exaggerating things?
No. No, no. Elon Musk is a down-to-earth guy who would never exaggerate or overpromise and underdeliver.
Oh, thank goodness. Okay. My image of Elon Musk is restored. Thank you. I was worried for a second. Thought I was going to have to change my views.
No. You can continue getting your views directly from Elon Musk's Twitter.
Thank goodness. Get that straight into my veins.
Yeah, so we'll talk a little bit about Tesla in a bit. But first, I kind of want to touch on the different kind of types of self-driving car, or the different sort of levels or classifications of self-driving car.
Yeah.
Because why do you think there are classifications of self-driving car?
For the law, one would assume.
Oh, that's interesting. No, not for that. So there's a classification system based on 6 different levels.
Is it from like an Isaac Asimov book or something?
No. You're going in a totally different direction. So this has come from the Society of Automotive Engineers. It was published in 2014, and the idea is essentially to just classify different levels of self-driving car based on how much intervention is needed from the driver. So it ranges from basically no automation to being fully automated. So 0 obviously is no automation, and in that case, you know, steering, acceleration, deceleration, the human driver does that, all of the stuff the human driver does, there's no automation, right? I don't need to go through all of these things.
That's just a car.
It's a car. You've driven one before. Well, actually, chances are you probably haven't.
No,
driven a fully,
because there's like even just things like the steering wheel helping you steer.
Yeah,
that's
so
like
useful.
Ugh.
I don't want to. I never, honestly. Okay, look, I would never want to drive, I think, one of the first cars, because despite the fact that they can't go very fast, and they probably don't weigh as much as a normal car, and they're pretty terrible. The handling on those,
yeah, you'd
be
have
abysmal.
To use your like upper body strength to turn the car, because you were literally turning the wheel rather than like turning a sort of game machine, which is what my car feels like. I'm driving a PlayStation game.
I hate driving your car. I've spoken about this on the podcast before, and I use this podcast sometimes as a soapbox to talk about views that I hold very strongly and deeply, and I swear to God, look, I hate driving your car so much. It's like driving a go-kart, but it's got the entire weight of a whole car. It's horrible. You just accelerate and brake, and like those are the only two buttons. I can't control anything else, and I hate it. I hate it so much.
I love it. Anyway, in old cars, they didn't have, what is it called? Like power steering?
Yeah, power steering.
And so you would literally be turning the actual wheels rather than turning a sort of thing that helps, that like has a motor or something in it that actually turns the wheels.
Yeah. And also the first car didn't have brake pads, right? It was the guy's wife that first, I think, took the car on a journey. She stole the car and took her kid to visit her parents. And along the way, she was like, oh man, this isn't braking very well. I'll just put some leather or whatever on it. And she invented the brake pads.
Genius.
I love that a bloke invented a car. And then his wife was like, man, you didn't really finish this, did you? Let me make it good. Let me make it actually good.
Yeah, amazing.
So moving on to the other kinds of self-driving car, you've got driver assistance, partial automation, conditional automation, high automation, and full automation. Let's just quickly run through what those are. So driver assistance, the steering, the acceleration, the deceleration, the human driver and the system both do that. Monitoring of driving environment, so, you know, looking out the windows and being like, oh, what's going on? Is there a car in front of me? Is there a hazard? that is done
mine does
by
that.
The... Does it do? Oh yeah, it does.
I have a
yeah.
little camera in it, does. That does that for me.
That's good.
It tells me I'm about to crash. Doesn't do anything about it. Well, it primes the brakes, but it doesn't actually do anything about it. But it goes, "You're about to crash," and then it just lets you die.
Yeah, I had that a few times actually. It's because with your car, I always hit the wrong thing.
Oh, that's encouraging.
No, well, because I'm used to there being three pedals, so my brain is just like not automatically making my foot hit the right thing. So yeah. I accidentally braked really hard because I thought I was hitting the clutch and I was about to accelerate off. I just slammed the brakes. So that would be driver assistance. Essentially, the steering is handled by the human driver and the system, but pretty much everything else is handled by the human driver. And there are different driving modes. There could be some different driving modes, right? Mm. Partial automation. The system can handles entirely the steering, acceleration, and deceleration, but the human driver monitors everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So the difference between those two would be the human driver has some control over the sort of steering and acceleration and deceleration, but the sort of computer, the car, assists or aids or helps in some way. So that would probably be like sort of cruise control and your sort of power steering, things like that. So then we've got the last three, which is separated from the first three based on which one of you is monitoring the driving environment, the system or the human driver. And so these next three, the system is monitoring the driving environment, right? And you go from conditional automation up to full automation, and the differences there are essentially obviously not who's monitoring the driving environment, but the difference of capability to handle different sort of driving modes. So there are six classifications of self-driving cars, essentially, which you don't really need to know about, but it's interesting to know that there's different levels that have already been classified, which is useful, like you've mentioned, I think, in law and legality there, because I think up until recently, you weren't allowed to have, I think, fully autonomous vehicles being tested on UK roads. I can't remember the exact date, but it was sometime, I think, in the 2010s, that it was the late 2010s, that they sort of said, yeah, you can test them on public UK roads, which is a little bit scary, I think.
But you always have to have someone there to grab the wheel.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. So, no, I'm not saying it's scary because they're sending empty cars out there, but still, it's just a little bit like you know.
It's fascinating, like the change we're going to see. Like in the world when you can summon your car to come pick you up from the train station, things like that. Like that's going to, to a certain extent, affect things like the housing market.
Mm.
If you're because no longer like the area around for example, a train station that will then be valuable slightly widens because you don't have to pay for parking, you don't have to pay for a taxi. You can summon your car.
Yeah.
Your car can follow you via GPS on your phone, predict when you're going to be at the train station, and come and get you.
So
like
cool.
That's incredible.
It's like calling an Uber, but it's your car essentially.
Yeah, well, and the reality is it's very possible that most people won't own cars.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Ubers will just be so cheap that you just don't bother owning a car.
Exactly. There'd be a cycling system of there's just maybe, you know, one car between, say, four people, like a family or whatever, that kind of sort of density. And whenever you need a car, you just hit the car button on your phone. Car comes, picks you up, takes me where I want to go.
And it is a little bit like dystopian. So like, there's that like, is it World Economic Forum idea of you will own nothing and you will be happy about this like future world where ownership will be less common for things like a car.
Well, yeah, I think.
Which some people have turned into a conspiracy theory. But the thing about that is like, if you think about how much space on the earth is taken up by cars that are currently not being driven.
Yeah.
Like to think about the transformation when we had cars. Where now, like every street, if we looked out the window of your house, every single space outside of every single house has a car on most British roads, which is absolutely ridiculous, the amount of space we dedicate to not currently being used cars.
And what's difficult as well is that British roads are narrow. You know, they're not like American roads that have been built to be big and wide and they've used up all the space. They're narrow. Narrow as all hell. And when you have a car on either side, they become even narrower. And it becomes like less safe driving. It's very difficult to drive down my road.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Compared to a road literally anywhere else, you know, because you've got to, like, if you've got another car coming up, it's like, okay, well, how are we going to pass each other? You know what I mean? And it would make things more efficient. But I think a point to hit on is that we think of self-driving cars as being, okay, yeah, personal Uber for everyone, but also just a self-driving bus. Do you know what I mean? A self-driving shuttle that goes to like, this could revolutionize sort of public transport as well, right? Which would be incredible. Imagine if public transport was so cheap because, you know, it was just autonomous. There you go, running along. And, you know, it was electric as well, let's say. And, oh, wait, no, I'm just making trams. Never mind. I'm making automated trams. Never mind. This is the thing with self-driving cars, though. I mean, the technology is fantastic. It can be used for like very specific sort of tasks, you know, like sort of truck driving or, say, bus driving or driving a tour bus for, you know, musicians or whatever, right? You could have it do all of these different sorts of things, right? But also, a lot of these problems can be solved by public transport. And this separation between self-driving, like autonomous vehicles, and using them in sort of more, I guess, sort of socialist-y sort of ways, there's this weird barrier between those two things, right?
Yeah, socialism.
Kind of on that, I found a line in a paper that I thought was absolutely horrifying and I absolutely needed to bring to the podcast today. So let me just read this out for you. It was talking about the impact that self-driving cars could have on society, the positive benefits of it. Automated vehicles could replace corporate fleets for deliveries or transporting employees, for example, and workers could gain productive hours in the day by working instead of driving during daily commutes. Workers could gain productive hours during the day by working instead of driving during daily commutes. That is horrific, right?
Yes. I mean,
you've got this opportunity of like, hey, we don't need to spend time driving to a place anymore. We don't need to spend time, you know, focusing on that. We can use that time for something else. Let's use it for productivity.
It's horrific because of the fact that that is like the proceeds of that don't go to the people who are working necessarily.
Yeah.
Or like a decent chunk of the proceeds don't go to. And also, they probably won't have a choice in the matter,
yeah,
because that would be just a general force of the market is like, well, workers who work on their commutes get promoted more, so you better do it or you get left behind.
Yeah, yeah.
But the idea of freeing up hours of human productivity is a wonderful idea. It's just how the spoils of that are distributed.
I think it's a wonderful idea. Yeah. What's horrifying is not freeing up time for productivity. It's the idea that you think, oh, employees on a commute, now they have got that time, they don't need to focus on driving, we can get them working more.
But I
it's
do
about
that.
It's about squeezing blood out of a stone, do you know what I mean?
Yes, but I don't have an employer, mm-hmm, but I do work, and I often choose to take the train rather than to drive, mm, because it gives me an extra hour of work time.
As do I.
Yeah.
But then we're our own boss and we're choosing that. You know, yeah, what I mean? It's for us and we enjoy the things that we do and it gives us more free time elsewhere, all of that sort of stuff. In this case, this isn't giving this person more free time elsewhere. This is taking up time that they were sinking into work unpaid and being like, okay, now you can work during this.
But you would also, the flip side of that is that you would also get paid for that time. And it's also that reads to me like one of these weird things where there's a great technology that's actually beneficial for society, mm-hmm, i.e. Like you have a self-driving car, which probably necessarily has to be an electric car, mm-hmm, which means lower emissions. And it's about these ways that like we have to create justifications to big business to adopt things that are actually quite good for everyone.
Yeah, but this is my point.
That you can, if you do this thing that's good for everyone, you also get a thing out of it. Great, invest.
Yeah, but this is my point though. There's this seeming wall between the idea of autonomous vehicles and more sort of socialist policies and outlooks, right? In that in the same sense that sort of self-checkouts, right? They could result in less people having to work less, so you could pay them the same and just have them work less, and there's less stress on them. They can apply their energy elsewhere, and we could be a better society, you know, with people that aren't being worked to the point of depression and other mental health issues. But instead, what we do is we don't change anything about the way we operate. We just have the technology that makes things easier and have people working just as hard, if not harder.
I sense the C word coming
in. Look, all I'm saying is that it ruins everything, Luke.
What's the C word?
I'm not going to say it.
I sense the C word.
Look, my point is
that... If you don't say it, then they'll think I'm saying the actual C word.
No, look, the point is that capitalism here has done this...
Oh, there it is!
Oh, yeah, say the thing, Bart! Look, the point is that it's really interesting to me how, you know, the sort of people that are sort of pushing forward self-driving cars, it's your Elon Musk types, your self-proclaimed sort of libertarian types that are actually very staunchly capitalist and don't really follow through their full beliefs of sort of libertarianism there. And I guess what I'm saying here is that we could use this for so much social good, right? Like, if you have a society wherein you don't need to have a job to survive, right, in that you can survive without selling your time, you know, without selling your labor, without selling your effort to someone that's just going to scoop a lot of the sort of value of that from you, we could have these self-driving cars and it makes things work way more efficiently, make things way easier, right? Obviously, still people need to sort of run those things and maintain them and whatnot, but we can have a society where, okay, so we don't, people don't need to be bus drivers. They can find another sort of, they can, I'm sure people love being a bus driver, right? But they could find something else. They could find something else to do with their time. They don't need to do it to work, so they have more options available to them. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But we don't have that.
We don't have that because we live in a global capitalist system where if you don't carry on growing, you'll fall behind and another country will take you over.
It's like, this is one of those things where people are like, well, people don't want to work to survive. Like, oh, they don't deserve anything. I'm like, we're going to get to a point where we don't need every single person on the planet working in order to sustain themselves. Do you know what I mean? Like, sure, when agriculture was
already
brand new.
We've already arguably got to that point, but it hasn't happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But this is why, like, the two sort of obvious solutions to this on, like, the surface level, mm-hmm. this is not me promoting either of these two solutions necessarily.
Kill everyone.
No. The two obvious solutions to this is, like, this is why you have, or one of the reasons why you have, some people arguing for a world government and some people arguing for closed nationalism, is because those are two ways of trying to achieve that. If you close yourself off from the global market forces, mm-hmm. then you can try to achieve that because you don't allow capital to come into your country. So you don't allow the incentives that come from sort of rich people laying down incentives to your workers in order to get them to do things that continue that system.
And how do you stop America from coming in and screwing you over?
Well, that's, you close all your borders and become nationalist and don't talk to anybody ever.
But then how do you stop America from coming in and screwing you over?
Well, then, yeah, you can't. That's the trouble, is that you can't actually stop them. Like, you can't stop them, like, blowing you up. And then, so the other option is, like, people then promote, like, a global government, mm-hmm. and then all the little governments, i.e. countries, they get anxious and they don't want or they like leave European Union or leave like all these other things. And also you get these conspiracy theorists going, oh, the global elite want to instantiate a global government. And like, well, yeah, they kind of do actually. But not in like an evil way, in like an efficiency way.
Yeah, yeah. This is the difficulty, right? Because I can definitely understand the sort of hesitancy towards a global government. I'm not going to sit here and be like, yes, global government, good. Have one person in charge of all things. That's not what I'm saying. But the cooperation between different countries is probably a beneficial thing, right? Look, I'm going to go out on a limb here and make a very out there point. Maybe working together is good. I don't know. What do you think? Working together, maybe a good thing.
Nah. I've grown tired of this relationship. Set up rival podcasts.
Oh, you mean work harder to compete with each other and not make a better thing?
Grow the pie, Curry.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, this is my point. Like, I like the idea of autonomous vehicles if it means making people's lives better. But I don't think that the way that a lot of people that are pushing for autonomous vehicles, I don't think that way is actually going to make people's lives all that much better, right?
I think it will make it objectively better in the same, because like, but it won't make society less unequal.
Difference. Yeah. You're going to raise everything, right?
Yeah.
You'll raise everyone up, right? Or, you know, a rising tide raises whole ships, but the bigger ships are still going to be getting a bigger, that doesn't work. Hold on.
Well, it's like the idea of like our government at the moment, cutting taxes in order to quote, grow the pie. That's their justification. It's like, we're trying to grow the pie. And it's like, well, so what they try to do is they're trying to grow the economy, but then also at the same time, they're making it more unequal. So the question you've got is like, would you rather have a small, fair pie or a big unequal pie?
You
reject the premise, which is that you can't have a big fair pie, which you can have a big fair pie.
Right.
It is possible. It is possible to have a big fair pie. And the justification, I'm doing an economics degree. And the first year of my economics degree was like learning how much of the stuff that's used to justify the economic and political decisions we make is like based on like clearly disprovable nonsense.
Yeah.
It's very depressing. But the idea that, there are things that are really difficult to balance in the world. Like if you put up taxes for extremely rich people, they just move countries or they move their tax affairs elsewhere or like those kind of things. And so like in a non-global world with a non-global government, it is very, you'd sort of rather have 15% of a billionaire's money than 30% of nothing. And you've got these really, I'm not saying that, that the world couldn't be better and that people couldn't be like not evil and we couldn't share things well. It's just that there are really tough things to try and balance, like trying to get external investment by not having too high taxes, but then does it actually work in in practice? When you cut taxes, it doesn't actually necessarily grow investment all the time. It just sort of makes rich people richer.
Well, this is my point, right? If your solution for solving inequality, right? If you want to solve inequality, and the way that you go about doing that is by saying, okay, look, what we're going to do is we're going to take the people that we know are very greedy and like to keep all the things for themselves, and we're going to give them more and hope that they change their minds and start giving things away to everyone. Like, that's not... if you give a billionaire more money, he's not going to be like, oh, cool, I'm going to share it with everyone. No, they're going to keep it and then share it in ways that are specifically beneficial to them.
Yes, but you're also dealing with, like... So, for example, you're not just dealing with, like... oh, we get 30% of everyone's money, or we get 20% of everyone's money. You're also dealing with like this idea called velocity of money, which is like you tax most of the time in most economies, you tax every time money is passed between people. And so one of the things about the tax system is that you're trying to make people feel rich so that they spend money, because if you get 15% every time someone spends money and they spend money 20 times, that's better than getting 20% or 30% every time people spend money and they spend money two times. So although the actual rate of tax is lower, if people spend more often, then you actually end up getting more money, which feels weird and counterintuitive, but it can work.
I feel like that's assuming that the people at the top, those billionaires, that 1%, are going to spend money the way that
they don't.
A normal person does.
And they don't spend money 10 times more when they have 10 times more money.
No, they don't.
They just put it in stocks or shares. Well,
when they essentially have infinite money. Like, if you've got infinite money glitch and you're like, oh, I've got 10 times more money now, I'm going to spend... No, you've already got max money. You've maxed it out. It doesn't matter if you add more on top. Do you know what I mean? You're going to spend the same amount. If you've got like 16 bill sitting behind you, getting an extra little bit, you're like, oh, well,
cool.
I'll chuck it on the pile, I guess.
Yeah.
And if someone's going to say, oh, it's not all liquid, they can't have it. I know. You're not making a groundbreaking point. I know. Billionaires don't have $1 billion sitting in a pile under their bed. That's ridiculous.
Well, but you're exactly right as well, in that when stock prices go up, when stock prices inflate and people have more money on paper, they don't automatically liquidate their assets and spend it. Like, they're just actually richer. So that when they want to do something, they get more stuff for the amount of work they've already done in the past. They don't go, oh, my net worth's gone up by £1 billion. I'm going to liquidate that into cash, pay my taxes on my capital gains. The government gets money and I spend it and I stimulate the economy. They are sometimes just richer on paper.
Yeah.
And the world is more unequal. It feels unfair and people are sad.
Yeah, yeah. My point here, we'll have to get back to self-driving cars at some point.
Please.
But I'll put a cap on that with this, okay? My main point here, I guess, is that really these sort of billionaires, these very rich people that were kind of, oh, we can't tax too much, or they'll just go somewhere else, or they'll just... Do you not see the problem with that? Not you, Luke. I know you see the problem with that. But if you're in support of that, do you not see the problem with a bunch of people that have money kind of unfairly just having such power over what a government decides to do with regards to taxes? Just because they're a billionaire, they get to essentially threaten an entire country's government and be like, oh, well, I'll just leave and make you worse off if you don't make things better for me. Like, that's probably not good. That's not a good bloke, I think. That's a bloke that we should say, hey, we're going to take your stuff because you're being mean. You're being rude. Let's just take your things from you. You don't get to do that to us.
Cool. I'll let the comments reply to that one.
What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that?
I don't want to unpack it.
All I'm saying is that if you've got like a few people basically holding a country hostage, oh, well, what's best for the majority is not what's best for me, so I'll just leave. It's one thing if it's like fairly gotten gains, but like I think we can all agree that no billionaire is a billionaire through fair and ethical business, you know?
No, but all I mean is that they're not holding the country captive. The country are having to make rules inside of the game that we're playing, and they're having to compete with the other countries. And I agree with you that it is not fair, but it's not. The thing is it's like our system, our general system. Yeah. Concentrates money amongst wealthy people. Mm-hmm. Like that, I think that's fairly clear that that's what happens. But it doesn't concentrate money among specific wealthy people. It just concentrates money among wealthy people. So who's rich changes, like across generations. Like Mark Zuckerberg's family were not anywhere near as loaded as Mark Zuckerberg is before Mark Zuckerberg came along and made Facebook. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like a specific person is holding any country captive.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's that like the idea, the prototypical rich person is holding a government captive, and any one government can't make the change. Every government will have to do it at the same time in order to affect change, because otherwise other countries just change their rules because they want 5% of a billionaire's money rather than the other country having 20% of the billionaire's money.
Ridiculous.
And it's just such a horrible problem to solve when you have separate countries who can, like you have a global monetary system, people can move around, and everyone's sort of incentivized to act in their own best, in their own interest rather than interest of the system. And it's a really flippin' hard problem to solve if you don't get every country to agree at the same time to not screw each other over. And there have been some strides towards this. The previous government, like, were part of this world, or like G7 or G20 or whatever, like minimum corporation tax agreement. And that was getting somewhere towards not having sort of tax havens for big business and things like that. But it's really hard. And there are countries who are worse off, who are happy to lower their taxes to incentivize billionaires to come across. And there are countries that are very well off, who have lobbying and they're an already sort of toxic monetary system. It's so difficult.
The system
difficult.
Is so deeply broken. Yes. Like, the system is so deeply broken. I think we just need to wipe it clean.
Well, it's not broken. It's
again.
Performing as designed. But
okay,
it's just not fit. It's not fit for purpose. It concentrates it concentrates money in the hands of people. And that's not really... it's just not really beneficial for everyone. It's just not,
yeah, absolutely.
It's not good
yeah.
for the whole.
That sounded like you had an end to that sentence.
Yeah, the whole.
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
He's ringing again. Why is he ringing this time, Corey?
He's ringing for After Dark Loop.
Why have we gendered our ad bell, Corey?
Because he's a boy and I want to respect him, just like I respect After Dark, our sister show to this podcast, Sci Guys. After Dark is what happens after Sci Guys ends. We just chat about whatever we want to chat about.
If you've ever been listening to Sci Guys and gone, God, I wish there were less facts, then you can listen to After Dark. I wish there were more opinions in this show.
More philosophy and politics.
Yes, After Dark is the show where Corey and I sit down, and maybe with a guest sometimes, sit down and discuss just more sort of floaty, woo-woo-y ideas about things we think with our brains.
And where can they watch this wonderful, wonderful show, Luke?
Well, they can listen to it and watch it at patreon.com/ Sci Guys, our Patreon, where you can also support us and help us keep doing this thing that you apparently like us doing.
Did you say patreon.com/Sci Guys?
Yes, I think I did. I think I did say patreon.com/Sci Guys.
Well, if you want to listen to After Dark, it seems like you should get to patreon.com/Sci Guys.
That's patreon.com/Sci Guys, in case you weren't paying attention.
Now pay attention, because we're about to start the show.
Oh, my attention has been paid and will continue to be paid until the end, when I go home.
Let's talk about self-driving cars and the technology behind them. You touched on some of the technology already. Do you wanna maybe hazard a guess at some other technology in self-driving cars?
Well, they use graphics cards.
Uh-huh.
That's how they do all their processing. I can't remember the exact reason why, but it's to do with like needing to do linear computation, I think. Like they need to do lots of small calculations at the same time. Something along those lines. Basically, graphics cards, I think, have got lots of tiny processors rather than like one giant processor. I can't remember the... Simultaneous computation, something like that. They need to do lots of calculations at the same time rather than one after the other. Something along those lines. Cameras, they need that. LiDAR, they might use that. God, what else? Machine learning, neural network stuff.
So, yeah, let's run through it. You're spot on. So LiDAR, do you know what LiDAR stands for?
Laser radar, something like that.
No, it's light detection and ranging. I had no idea until I looked this up. But yeah, light detection and ranging. Do you know what LiDAR is?
Well, it's fires out little lasers that sort of bounce back and you get depth information.
Yeah, yeah. It basically measured how far away something is by shining a light on it.
It's amazing because it uses the actual speed of light. That's how quickly it's working, is that it fires out a pulse of light and then waits to see how long it takes to come back, and that's the actual speed of light, 300,000 meters per second.
Yeah.
And it's calculating that quickly.
It's like, amazing. What? It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And so it uses that sort of, usually that there's something on the roof of the vehicle and it sort of does it 360 degrees. So it's sending that out, you know, and it maps sort of, it's got a sort of 3D map of the environment that way. There's also radar, which stands for radio detection and ranging. So LIDAR, light detection and ranging, radar, radio detection and ranging. You can see. Yeah. Well, realistically though, they're both light, aren't they?
Yeah, different spectrum of light. Yeah.
Electromagnetic waves. They're both, you know, it's they're just using different wavelengths, really. But it's a similar thing. Do you know how radar works?
Fires out a radio wave.
Yeah.
Waits for it to come back.
Oh wow, spot on. Yeah, absolutely.
Waits a very small amount of time for it to come back, but it does wait.
It doesn't wait very long. Yeah. And so yeah, it's a similar idea. Obviously, there's some issues with radar in terms of the materials that it's looking at. So it's good to use, you know, both of these things. It's basically, self-driving cars use a lot of different inputs to build a map of the environment. So you've got ultrasonic sensors as well. So those use sort of sound to measure the sort of distance from things. It can measure oncoming vehicles, the speed, obstacles, all of that sort of thing. And there's video cameras, and they build real-time 3D images of, you know, what's in front of the car, so the upcoming road. And so those find traffic lights, stop signs, crossings, all of that sort of stuff. There's also GPS, which is Global Positioning System, obviously. And you know how GPS works.
Satellite in the sky sends out a very accurate time, and the car compares what the time is when it received that signal from the time when it left. And then it does that with three different satellites. It gets a triangulation and of three different distances because it knows the location of the satellites. Mm-hmm. And so then it knows the location of itself.
So incredible. And that actually takes into account relativity, right?
Yes.
Because you need to take into... Because... So just to explain this really quickly, because I find this all super interesting. I don't even have this in front of me. I just love this. Because when things move at different speeds, they experience time differently. Basically, that's the simplest way of putting it. If you move faster or slower, you're experiencing time at a different speed to things that are moving at a different speed from you, right? That's basically relativity, to put it very simply. What's his name? Einstein is just rolling in his grave. He's trying to bust out. He's like, no, you're not right.
German accent necessary.
Yeah. I don't even think he was actually German. He's like Austrian or something. Like,
yeah.
So.
No.
That is not correct. So yeah, because the satellites are orbiting the Earth, if you weren't to take into account that speed that they're moving at in comparison to, you know, whatever is moving on the Earth, your calculations would be off to a noticeable degree. And so, you know, you've got to take that into account to get very, very precise and accurate readings, which is incredible to me. So let's talk about triangulation, because I find it really interesting. And if someone doesn't understand, it's good to understand why you need three or more satellites. So let's say you're standing in a point, right, and you want to find out where you are using a sort of map. And you can see a landmark, and you know the distance between yourself and that landmark, right? So you can draw basically a circle around this landmark. You don't know where you are on the map, but you know you're, say, 10 meters away from this landmark. You draw a circle with a 10-meter radius. You're somewhere within that circle.
On the line.
Yeah, the perimeter of that circle, right? And if you get another landmark, you're like, okay, well, I'm 12 meters away from that. And you draw a 12-meter circle. Okay, well, that circle will intersect with that first circle at two points, mm-hmm. right? That's how circles work, right? You'll intersect at two points. And so you now have it. You have it down to a much sort of smaller range of area that you can be within. But if you have a third sort of circle, you have a third landmark, and you draw a third circle, boom, there you go. You can pinpoint exactly where you are because you're going to be where the perimeter of those three circles intersect. That's where you have to be. And you can be more specific, obviously, if you've got more landmarks to judge your distance from. But that's why you use three or more, because it's just more specific than using any less.
Absolutely.
So let's just run through how they actually work. So we've got the technology behind them. Let's talk about how all of this comes together into making it work. I'm just going to read this out verbatim because it's a really good explanation from this paper I was reading, linked in the description, obviously. So it says, driver sets a destination and car software calculates a route and starts the car on its way. A rotating roof-mounted LiDAR sensor monitors a 60-meter range around the car and creates a dynamic 3D map of the car's current environment. A sensor on the left rear wheel monitors sideways movement to detect the car's position relative to the 3D map. Radar systems in the front and rear bumpers calculate distances to obstacles, and artificial intelligence software in the car is connected to all the sensors and has input from Google Street View and video cameras. This is talking about, I think, a specific self-driving car.
Probably
but,
the Google one.
Obviously, this the principles of this match pretty much any self-driving car, right? The specifics, not so much, but the principles of this is what these different systems are used for, this is how they sort of interact. It's not entirely consistent, but it gives you a decent idea of how they're working. And then artificial intelligence software in the car, as I've said, connects to all the sensors and then uses in this car specifically uses Google Street View and video cameras. And it also can connect to Google Maps to understand like, okay, well, these landmarks coming up, these obstacles might be coming, all of that sort of stuff. So essentially, what it's doing, really interestingly, is just exactly what you do, but with more, I guess, sort of specific, not specific, more sort of, I guess, sensitive technology in some regards, or more wide-ranging technology, in that you don't look 360 degrees around you. You can't, right? You can only be looking in one direction at the time, at one time, whereas an autonomous vehicle could be looking in all directions at all times, essentially, right?
Like an owl.
Yeah. No, because an owl can only look in one direction at a time.
Well, but doesn't the LiDAR on the top spin round?
It spins, yeah.
So an owl could theoretically just keep spinning back and forward at 50 times a second.
I suppose an owl could... Well, no, because an owl has to... It doesn't rotate
no,
completely.
No, but it goes back and forward, back and forth. 50 okay. times a second.
Right, so you're back and forth. Okay, cool. Yeah, right. Gotcha. No, so you can understand how this sort of works, but... while an autonomous car is better than you at sort of seeing what's going on around it, sort of, you know, taking in all of that sensory data, it is much worse at translating that into what is actually going on.
Yeah,
right?
It's still quite stupid.
Yeah, it's stupid. And that's where human drivers sort of come in that, okay, look, I know when I'm driving in a car, you're not really thinking about this, but you are doing so much processing of information because there's all these hazards coming up in front of you, and you've got to think about behind you, to your sides. You've got your sort of rear view mirror, your wing mirrors, and looking out the front as well. Not to mention looking out the sides. Like, there is a lot of information, but you're able to process that and understand, oh, that's a traffic light. Whereas, you know, when you're doing these bloody captures and you're like, point out all the traffic lights. Have you ever wondered why maybe these Google captures are all about road stuff?
Yeah, you're training an AI.
You're
every
training
time
an AI.
You do it.
Yeah,
so annoying.
It's exactly. You're training an AI to recognize that stuff, which is why these captures need to be constantly updated, because you're training the AI that is going to be then learning to sort of find that stuff much better, to the point where they'll be able to figure out those captures at some point.
So if you don't like Google, then just tell it that boats are trains and bikes are cars, and you'll take down the entire system.
Yeah, if you want to take down the self-driving car industry from the from the comfort of your own home, you could just do as many captures and do them as wrong as possible. But no, I mean, I think that's a sort of interesting thing that people may not actually think about, that yeah, we're constantly training AIs without even really realizing it. Like, this sort of technology has infiltrated our day-to-day life in ways that we're not really made fully aware of. Because I'm pretty sure Google doesn't explain anything about their CAPTCHA stuff. Like, if you try and Google how Google's CAPTCHA sort of software works and all of that, they're not telling you.
Yeah, there are... Yeah, they don't... Well, they don't tell you in part their rationale for not telling you, so that people who want to get past the CAPTCHA system can't build a system.
I understand that completely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there are like rival, especially because of the fact that Google is using it not as they're using the data in a way that they're not communicating to the user.
Exactly.
And they're building other areas of Google's business without necessarily getting consent from the user, or reimbursing the user, or reimbursing the website whose users they are using. There are other CAPTCHA companies coming, like cropping up specifically as like a reaction to this information, like HCAPTCHA.
I do find this incredibly interesting in terms of, you know, Google has done a very like capitalist, like in sort of a capitalist view, it's done a very, very good thing where it's like, oh, let's just use people for labor.
Well,
whilst also providing them a service and make them do labor without even realizing it. Because like, to like, you could have sort of those like, I guess, click farms essentially, where someone's like solving a captcha over and over and over, and you could pay someone to do that, or you could just make it an almost, you know, sort of ubiquitous thing across the internet and have people do it for you for nothing.
It's the same thing as like the Facebook like button, where people wanted to get their companies to have likes on Facebook, mm-hmm. and so they took the Facebook code to put the like button on their website, mm-hmm. and then the like button tracked those everyone across the internet for ads. There's a Google system which allows you to track like your website's traffic and say like, oh, this user came from this search engine when they searched this thing. But that also allows Google to track everyone across the internet. So they provide a free service to web developers to sort of do statistics on their website, which is a very labor-intensive thing to code mm-hmm. yourself. But then they use that data for another thing. Same thing as like there are frameworks which app developers can use to do things easily in their apps that also send a bunch of user data back to some random like advertising company.
This is the issue, right? I don't think that necessarily collecting that information is bad inherently, hear me out, because if there's consent and informed consent involved, I know that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's inherently bad if there's informed consent involved and it's going towards a public good. That's bloody cool, in the same sense that like, if you have informed consent and you could opt in, oh yeah, use my medical records for XYZ studies, right? That'd be brilliant, you know, giving more data that can be processed and used. If it's, you know, good data, it can be, and it can be processed in a way that is useful. That's brilliant. And I think that it would make the world a better place if we could trust people to do that in a way that is, you know, a net good for sort of the human race. If we could trust people to do that, that'd be brilliant. Unfortunately, we can't trust people to do that. So we're in this really difficult position of, well, we've got this framework for where we could get a lot of data and we could use it, you know, in a good way potentially. But instead, let's just sell it to advertisers. Let's just make some money, you know? Like I wish that sort of there was an incentive for companies to focus on good for humanity outside of good for themselves, you know? But there's not really, unless we build sort of financial incentives and all of that sort of stuff, you know, around it.
Yeah, or even, I feel like, not to get too far back into the C word, but even if there was a sense, amongst most people that growth of companies and growth of businesses sort of benefited everybody mm-hmm. through fair taxation and things like that, where when a company makes more money, that actually results in a net good for everyone, or at least mm-hmm. for the country that you're in. But I don't think there is a sense of that. Like, regardless, taking away whether or not there actually is, what your thoughts are on taxation, mm-hmm. what your thoughts are on the level of taxation, what your thoughts are on big business, things like that. We know that, for example, big businesses pay lower rates of effective tax than small businesses in most cases, like because they have tax avoidance schemes or tax evasion schemes. Not tax evasion schemes, that's libelous.
Yeah, our only tax avoidance scheme is you.
I don't avoid any. I'm too scared. I'm far too scared. I had a meeting with an accountant the other day, and I was like, I don't want you to do anything dodgy. I just want to be safe.
No.
I'll just get good at what I do, and I'll get paid well for that, and that's how I'll get make money. Not for you, like going, oh, we'll just claim this random thing that isn't really anyway. But yeah, if regardless of what your thoughts are, what the audience's thoughts are on specific levels of taxation and whether it's fair or not, you probably have to agree that amongst most people, amongst the general population, there isn't a sense that our economic system is fair, like is taxed fairly, mm-hmm. right? But if there was, if Google doing well genuinely felt like they provided a lot of the tax revenue that pays for the public services, we probably would be okay with it. I think that a lot of the problems we have with what big business does is because we feel like they're free riders to some extent, not because we necessarily go, I don't want to train Google's car. I don't really care if I train Google's car.
Yeah. I would love to. I just, if that was going to a net public good, but it's not.
Well, I don't want to make a statement like it is or it isn't. I just want to say that if the sense was that it was going to a net public good, if we felt that, like, for example, I've always felt that rather than publishing a Times rich list, we should publish a Times highest taxpayers list. Because regardless of the fact that, like, you know, you, oh, well done, you paid your taxes fairly, well done, yeah, we shouldn't be applauding that. It's, I'd rather applaud this person made £100 million and paid £20 million of tax.
Look how much they get back. Yeah.
Rather than this person is worth £100 billion and you're not getting much of that because they have a network of accountants in the Cayman Islands, which means you won't see any of it.
Yeah, it's like praising the kid that comes into school with the most toys as opposed to praising the kid that shares the most of their toys with the other students in the class. You know?
And yes, they have more toys than everyone, but they also share the most toys. And that, I'd rather celebrate that than celebrate who has the most toys and doesn't share them.
Exactly, because like, if you got toys and not sharing them, all right, go for you. You got toys. Because your daddy probably got you those toys.
I just think it would be such a lovely thing if we're going to celebrate richness, which it seems like we are. I think it'd be such a wonderful thing to go like, oh, Bill Gates or whoever paid $20 billion in tax this year.
But dude,
I can't comprehend that. Great.
We're not the same as a lot of other people. A lot of other people have a mindset of, you know, you don't need to help other people and people can do whatever they want and they have no obligation to help others or to benefit society in any way. In this very individualist sort of viewpoint, and I'm like, okay, fair. Fair in that I understand that you can have a different view and all of that. That's fine. But like, do you actually think that's going to lead to a net good for everyone? It isn't. And I think the only way that you can have that mindset is by putting yourself in the group of people that are going to win. If there's going to be winners and losers, and you are like, that's the way the world is, that's the way it has to be, you can only have that when you see yourself as a winner. But most people are not going to be winners. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not a system that is based entirely on sort of, meritocracy. It's not a meritocracy, right? It's not a system that's based entirely on how good you are and how hard you work. There are a lot of other confounding factors, but let's get back to self-driving cars. So I wanted to today talk about this little experiment that someone tried to do wherein they wanted to run over a child in a Tesla.
Oh,
or
my
rather,
God, yes.
They wanted to prove that the Tesla would not run over a child. Yes. We don't have time for this.
This Twitter dude.
Unfortunately, we didn't have time. There's too much to cover today. We've been speaking about capitalism this whole time. So what we're going to do instead is go to our Patreon and we're going to do a bonus episode on this over on our Patreon.
Brilliant.
So if you want to listen to us talk about a man who decided to try to run over a child or not run over a child to prove that Elon Musk is a good bloke, then go to our Patreon, patreon.com/SciGuys. This is a really great story and I'm actually bummed. Like, I did a bunch of reading on it and I was building the episode. I was like, I can't slot this in. It's a whole story in and of itself. Let's put it to a bonus episode because it's so much fun. And you know what? I'm going to say the results are not necessarily conclusive. You know, we can't take what we've seen from this and say this applies to everything. But it's definitely interesting. So go give it a watch. Go give it a listen. But back to what we're actually talking about today with regards to self-driving cars. I want to kind of end on the morality conversation, right? Because that's a really, really big, important part of self-driving cars. You've got these artificial intelligences that need to do morality. Because you can't avoid morality when you're driving a car. Because look, even if all cars are perfect and they remove all traffic and blah, 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 there are still humans that are going to mess stuff up. And even if humans don't mess stuff up, there's still going to be faults here and there, right? Nothing is perfect. Everything is fallible. There's going to be an accident at some point. And we should not wait until that accident happens and suddenly, you know, Tesla's being sued by little Jimmy's mother because the car just decided to mow him down instead of hitting a bin or whatever, right? Like, and I'm not saying that's what a Tesla would do. I'm just giving a hypothetical example here, right? We can't wait until that point to properly decide how, like, what we're going to do here. And the interesting part here is that this is not universal, right? This morality is not universal. There was a study, and there's a Nature article about it. There's this study that looks at different people across the world, and it finds that actually the ethics and morality of self-driving cars differ for different populations. So they laid out 13 scenarios in which someone's death was inevitable, and the people that were being asked, they were asked to choose whose life they would save and whose life they would, you know, I guess, sacrifice in these situations. Essentially kind of like a trolley problem, right? So they've got mixes of different variables, so young or old, rich, poor, more people, less people. What do you think, right? Let's set up a few scenarios, right? If you've got an old person and a young person, and you've got to choose which one of them is going to be hit by the car, which one do you choose?
Well, there's so many factors because there's, for example, you might automatically go, well, I hit the old person because they've had a good life. The young person has more life ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's more that's been lost from the world by a young person dying than an old person dying. But then what if it's like the young person has a higher chance of survival than the old person?
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's in a certainty of death thing, which a computer's isn't, you know, we're not going to be able to calculate that necessarily. So I don't know quite, but probably my instinct would be hit the old person.
Hit the old person. And I think that makes sense based on our culture. But in other cultures, they would hit the younger person. You know, other cultures, I think ones that sort of venerate their elderly more. Whereas we don't value our elderly as much. We've got a ton of them and we're like, oh, Christ, these ones. Bloody hell, you're stopping us from being a good country by voting for the Tories still. Come on, lads. Get with it. No, I'm joking. But like, you know what I mean? Like, we venerate our elderly less as an entire population. We've got some of us that love the old people and others that are like, whatever. So a lot of people in the UK, I think, would probably choose to hit the old person and spare the kid's life. What about a rich person, like a sort of, so here was an example, I think it was a sort of rich businessman or a homeless person.
I would not pick between the two. Like, I wouldn't make a choice.
Yeah.
That would be that feels like a weird thing to...
Right, exactly. No. And I agree, right? And so
well, net good for society. If you hit the rich person, then you get inheritance tax.
Right, do you know what? I was...
You don't get any inheritance tax from a homeless person.
When you said net good for society, I was like, yep, we're going down the same road here. Look, I'm not saying, you know, hit the rich, right? No, absolutely not. They are...
I'm just being,
tasty,
if you have to pick...
And you shouldn't eat roadkill.
You have to try and find a variable upon which to make that decision. Not roadkill.
I said you shouldn't eat roadkill.
Oh, I see. But if you have to find... Like, if you have... Like, breaking that thing open... Like, I'm trying to find a variable upon which I could make that decision. And if we're looking at, like, well, what will society gain or lose from the two things? I suppose if you hit the homeless person, then I don't know. God, well, they're homeless. And so they're clearly, the government's probably not doing anything for them anyway because they're homeless. So they're not being put somewhere where they have a home. So they're not even like, from an extremely right-wing perspective, like taking resources from the state.
Yeah.
But the rich person, if you kill them, then you get loads of inheritance tax, assuming they have not set up their affairs in such a way that they avoid all their inheritance tax.
Why? Who would do that? What? But no, I think it's interesting, right? Because for me, I make jokes, but it is a coin toss in that I don't value people based on their wealth, right? And we could go down different justifications for why we would hit which person and why we would hit that person. Like, okay, sure, hit the rich person because it's a net good to society because inheritance tax, or hit the homeless person because they're less likely to have a lot of close social contacts that are going to notice and miss them.
And
would be one viewpoint, not mine, but it would be like someone's potential viewpoint, and you can understand where someone is coming from with those explanations, despite the fact that, like, you know, I disagree with them entirely, I can understand where someone's coming from. That's not to say that they're totally sound, but someone's coming from a place that you can be like, okay, well, I see where you're coming from. I can see why you've made that decision. I disagree with it completely, but whatever.
So now name and shame the cultures that chose, definitely hit the homeless person.
It's actually really interesting because you could sort of look at it in terms of economic inequality. So in places that have less economic inequality, they are kind of like us, where they're like, I don't really know, like, whichever one, coin toss sort of thing. So places like Finland, that's a small gap between the rich and the poor. They have this sort of, overall, have this sort of viewpoint of, I can't really make this decision. You know, there's no preference. Whereas places like Colombia, where there's a much larger disparity, they would choose to kill the lower status person, interestingly. And that's not saying all Colombians want to kill poor people. That's not at all what to take away from this. But I think it's interesting just looking at these differences in terms of sort of morality between different cultures, because that's something to take into account as well. You're making your Tesla in, say, the US. That's not going to have the same... You can't have the same sort of... choices being made by that sort of vehicle as you would in Japan or the United Kingdom or the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
Imagine you're like rich and you're going on holiday to a place where the cars choose to kill rich people. And so you dress like you're not rich so that you don't get hit by a car.
Look, I think that you've just hit on the best way to stop billionaires from fleeing countries. It's, look, we'll tax you a ton, But also,
the cars will hit
these
you.
Cars will hit you. And you leave. Look, we'll tax you a ton, but the cars won't hit you here.
So you have to make it so that the car can make a judgment on two things. Number one, they have to know whether you're rich, but they also have to know whether you were born in the country where you are. So that if you're crazy rich, mm-hmm. but you also are have emigrated for financial reasons. Then the cars will be more likely to hit you. If you're a rich person in the country and you haven't emigrated for financial reasons, the cars will avoid you.
How about this? You just have everyone wear a little chip. Every rich person wear a little chip, right?
Yeah.
That says that just if you scan it, it tells you how much they paid in tax, right?
Yeah.
Compared to how much, you know,
the effective tax rate.
Exactly. And if someone is paid a lot in tax, a car avoids them. And if they've not, boom, mows them down.
Wow.
Goodbye, Elon Musk. I'm joking.
Good God.
No, so let's just quickly, before we finish this off, just run through the advantages and disadvantages. What do you think some advantages and disadvantages are for self-driving cars?
Well, they probably have a lower accident rate eventually once mm-hmm. we've sort of finished them off. They can talk to each other. In theory, although there is a bunch of stuff about like how they've installed all these chips to make the cars talk to each other, and then the cars don't really actually do it in the end. I can't remember what it's called, but yeah, basically that. It's arguably more efficient because you don't have to either drive it yourself or employ people to drive cars, so those people can go and do other jobs and be productive mm-hmm. in other areas. So you get a productivity raise in the general economy, regardless of your thoughts on that. You could probably drive more economically because you can make predictions of road conditions up ahead. What else? Well,
traffic is one that I want to mention because so much traffic comes from nothing, right? If one person brakes a little bit too late and then that passes up the chain, that's a traffic jam. If you've got autonomous vehicles that are talking to each other, that doesn't happen because they can all accelerate and decelerate sort of in tandem, mm-hmm. in unison, and no traffic. There you go. I mean, you know, there you've kind of hit on a ton of the sort of advantages here, right? You know, we could, it's basically freeing up time for us to do what we want with. And sure, we could be more productive, we could apply it to other areas, whatever. It is increasing productivity, it is more efficient in that way. The disadvantages, obviously, would be the moral aspect, the fact that the technology is not necessarily quite there yet, and there are going to be problems that we've not sort of we've not caught until they start happening. And it's much harder, I think, it's much easier sort of in our society to blame a person mm-hmm. for a thing. But blaming an AI, like a technology for a thing, it's like, well, who do you blame? Do you blame the company? Do you blame the person that programmed it? Do you blame the person that that sort of approved it? How do we go about this, right? If a car mows down a kid and a person is driving and that person is drunk, boom, easy.
And do you allow different companies to have different moral sets?
Exactly.
So, like, then you get into the issue of like, oh, well, you paid for more for your car, so it's going to prioritize your life over the life of a pedestrian.
Exactly.
Or you pay a higher insurance rate, and so it's going to prioritize your life over the life of a pedestrian. Like, that gets really messy. You'd probably need to have standardized rule sets, otherwise you're going to get into really murky territory. Well,
I think I agree. And, you know, and people will be resistant to, oh, top-down control from the government, but a standardized rule set, that's what we've got already, you know. That's how it works. We wouldn't have like laws around driving and guidelines and regulations if we didn't already have a standardized rule set. And yes, different people have got different morality, but the idea is that we should all be matching the law. And so, you know what I mean, like having a standardized sort of moral framework isn't all that more oppressive than what we've already got, which is guidelines around driving, right?
Has there been a film yet where someone, I mean, because it would be probably made by America, it'd probably be Russia. Russia hacks all the cars and just starts running everyone over.
No, but that'd be brilliant. It'd be a great film.
I'm writing it now.
But yeah, so that's kind of an overview on self-driving cars, autonomous vehicles. We could do more episodes on this, looking at more specific areas. If you want to check out that bonus episode, you absolutely can. But I think it's time for a quickfire quiz.
Done. Car edition, self-driving.
So the rules for the quickfire quiz are the same as they always are. Look, I will ask one question. That's one question just for you. You're going up against the audience. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finished asking the question wins. What do they win, Luke?
A self-driving car
paid
for by Corey.
No.
Yeah.
No. Nothing. You win nothing.
I've always wanted a Tesla.
Here is the question. Get ready to answer it. If you beat Luke, let us know in the comments. The question for you is, Luke, what does LiDAR stand for?
Oh, dear God. Oh no, they've got it already. Oh no,
we just said it.
Light,
yes,
is
no.
Light,
yeah.
Informed.
I'm gonna put you out your misery here. It's light detection and ranging.
What?
The LI comes from light. The yeah, yeah. It's not a good acronym. It's not even a full acronym, is it?
No.
It's a fake one.
Sucks.
I'm sorry, Luke. But that is all we've got time for today. Before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to executive producers Danito and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find full references to this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. Together now.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com. You can follow me at NotCore everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
And down to the self-driving car shop where Corey's going to... Oh, I didn't get it, did I? I didn't win. So you're not going to buy me a self-driving car.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.